mind. I created it. Don't you? I created it, and it's real. Don't you understand?
Hello everyone, welcome to Struggle Session, brought to you by the Blue Wire Network. Or if you're listening to us on patreon.com/strugglesession or sesh.plus or strugglesession.substack.com, thank you so much for your subscription and support. As always, today I am joined by my co-host Jack Allison. Jack, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing okay. I'd be doing better if I was still in Pandora.
Yeah, I mean, we all come down with that syndrome. I was going to say Blue Wire. You know, really, that's the connection, you know, that all the people on people and plants of Pandora have through AWA. You know, that's really what that is for this episode.
Yes, folks, today we are talking Avatar 2: The Way of Water. Won't he do it, folks? I know people usually say that phrase about another JC. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about James's Cameron. He did it. He did it again. And Jack, I have to say, I had my moment of doubt, like Peter. In fact, oh, Jack, wow. I have to kind of tell a story about how I saw Avatar The Way of Water. Because I had some time with my doubt. So I went to go see it in the late night, 11:30 show. Now, I have forgotten this, but most late-night movies, Jack, they clock in around 80 minutes.
Sure.
Avatar The Way of Water is 3-something hours.
Yes, this is 3 and change. This is 3 and a quarter.
And so that was a bit too much for our viewing party. So, Jack, I actually left the theater.
Wow.
2 hours into this, about
now
2.5
hours
into.
That's going to give you Pandoran blue balls there, truly, to cut out early.
And because, Jack, I had to say, at that moment, I was not feeling the movie.
Oh, what? How far into it were you?
I was at the exact moment where shit really kicks off is when I left, Jack. So mm-hmm. I had my 2 hours of doubt. At that point, all I had seen was, you know, Na'vi water culture and the little whales and, like, just too much joy and happiness and just enjoying, like, Pandoran scenery. You know, that's what I got in
that's kind of what that's what this whole thing is about. You know, that's what the avatars are all about. You can't cut out all of the, you know, pleasures of Pandora, but then, of course, it does pop off in Act 3.
Yes, and so I missed that moment where it does pop off and it gives me the thing, my James Cameron stuff, you know, my actual, you know, Terminator shit, you know, and I missed all of that. So for a couple of days, I'm sitting here thinking, what if Avatar Way of Water is just not good? What if it's just bad? It's just a bad movie that, you know, has some cool stuff in it, but doesn't kind of meanders, doesn't really go anywhere just because it's part 2 of what is going to be 6 parts. And this was just, you know,
5
kind of
the
filler episode.
So five parts. Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of feeling like, okay, maybe this is just like, you know, episode 4 and 5 of an anime OVA, you know, one where it's just kind of filler stuff in it. But then I go back to see it today, Jack. The scales have fallen from my eyes.
I mean, the third hour, you know, the third act is kind of unbelievable. It really is. I do think this third act, you know, it's kind of Cameron doing like all of it. It's
yes.
Him doing Terminator. He's doing Titanic. He's doing Abyss. He's like doing all of it at once, you know. And yeah, pretty incredible third hour for this movie.
It's so sick. It's combines so many different types of action singing mm-hmm. at the same time. And it just flawlessly cuts in between the two of them. It just seems so effortless. It's like this movie clearly heavily influenced by the video games that were influenced by the James Cameron movies, but he outdoes them. This is better than any video game. This is all. This movie you may walk out of this movie feeling like, damn, I watched a 3.5-hour cutscene. But folks, this is like better than any of the latest Final Fantasy. This will be the best Final Fantasy.
You would be wrong if you walked out saying that you felt like you saw a 3-hour cutscene, because this is also like better, first of all, than any movie, but also better than any game as far as like the technology and the amount of emotion that they're able to get in people's faces, like the way the water looks. Like, yes, this is like far better than what any film is doing, and it should. I mean, you'd be right to walk out of some of the Marvels and Star Wars feeling like, okay, that's like what I see in a video game. This is like 20 years ahead, you know, even as far as the amount of acting that they're able to get out of all these 3D characters. You know, you're really watching a movie where nearly every character in it is a Shrek. We forget, you know, while watching this movie, that we're watching the drama, the family drama of a bunch of Shreks. And that's kind of what I was like, you know, aside from the action at the end being just, you know, unbelievable. I was really taken in by, just how much performance they're able to get out of all these blue avatar creatures. There really are parts of the movie where you kind of forget that it's all fake. That every single like centimeter of the Dolby screen is a fake 3D, you know, computer generated image, you know, because there really are. It just really does read as real for the whole movie.
You have to get it this good for it to be worth your time to stare at, you know, a CGI protagonist, antagonist, their whole family for 3 hours. But James Cameron is so, there's so much fidelity and as you said, so much life to the characters that you just buy into these characters and these Na'vi. And even though some of my favorite parts of the films were the parts where the humans showed up, and I wish there was a bit more of that, like by the end of this movie, it's like, it does not matter. Like the Na'vi are real.
Yeah, the Na'vi, I definitely do, you know, I believe in Jake Sully's family. You know, honestly, I'm like, is Stephen Lang giving a better performance in this Avatar than even the first Avatar? Where I love him as Quaritch in the first one. But this one, there is something so good and appealing about his Avatar Quaritch, you know, and the little faces, the evil kind of that comes across. Like, he is so good in this one. I think maybe even better than the first one. I don't know.
Because I did not pay that much attention to the trailer or the previews. I kind of went in cold. And I was pleasantly surprised to see Sigourney Weaver in this film as like a teenage version of herself.
I think maybe Sigourney Weaver for Best Supporting Actress with this movie. Because aside from, and you can't avoid this, but aside from a little bit, her voice sounds like the age Sigourney Weaver is. But outside of that, she is extremely convincing as Kiri. And this is also like, you know, I saw a slightly early screening, and they played, you know, a making of featurette at the end of it. And they talked about how this movie was made and how it is different, you know, than even other movies that have used motion capture. And what James Cameron was using is this place, you know, this soundstage called The Volume, where basically they'd put everyone in their, you know, motion capture suits, like the suits we've seen a million times with all the tennis balls on them, the camera that's like right in your face and all the dots on your face. But they would actually like walk around the physical space and kind of go through a jungle gym. Like when we see them walking on, you know, the walkways of the Metkayina clan, which are kind of like, you know, spongy, you know, like a little bit springy, they're really walking around a bunch of like nets that are set up in this space. Like, so they're actually like physically doing all the actions. And it was very funny in this, you know, behind the scenes thing, you see Sigourney Weaver and it's just Sigourney Weaver alongside like three other kids, you know, and they're all wearing this motion capture suit. But this is really the kind of thing that I'm like, wow, this is like what the technology kind of allows you to do. Like, yeah, why not have Sigourney Weaver play the teenager and the other kids are played by real kids who we're going to watch grow up? Like, This is why Cameron is working at like operating at like a wholly different level than everybody else. You know, like he is like, you know, Kiri is obviously going to be a more important character as the movies go on. That would be like my one sort of complaint about this movie is, like you said, it is, you know, set up to be part of a franchise. It's less of a, although it's a very complete story, it's less of a complete story than the first Avatar. But yeah, I you know, he's setting us up for Kiri to be such an important character and have this saga, and he's having Sigourney Weaver play her. It really is wild. Also, just the amount of people who got to come back from the first Avatar. I really think it's only Michelle Rodriguez who didn't get to come back.
Which is too bad.
Too bad. But there really isn't a good way to have her come back. Like, Quaritch, yes. I buy it 100%. I buy 100% they sent his brain back to Earth to put it in an Avatar body. Michelle Rodriguez, who didn't have an Avatar and who betrayed the Marines, there's really no good way to get her back, I don't think.
No. We get to see a lot more of, you know, the Sully family and what they've been up to. Jake Sully and Neytiri, they've grown into adults, and they had these four, is it like five kids? They introduced like five kids.
Well, there's Took, there's Loak, there's like Natana, and there's Kiri. So I think that's four kids, but Kiri is adopted.
Yeah, but also you got Spider there. And Spider,
I mean, Spider
is
fucking
kind,
kicks it. Spider, by the way,
is like the Jon Snow of this. There's a lot of Game of Thrones, a bit of Game of Thrones in this, I think.
The adopted human child who we find out is Quaritch's son. Spider, I was actually really worried when I heard about the, you know, this sequel in the early days. I was like, ooh, it's going to be like Avatar Jr. It's this like cast of a bunch of kids. I thought they were all great, and Spider was actually a standout for me. Spider, who like is this white kid with white guy dreads, you know, dressed in like
that
a little
going
loin,
around in the movie,
dressed like Tarzan in a little loincloth or whatever. You're kind of like, uh-oh. Spider really worked for me, and I felt like I thought Spider was fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, I was getting kids from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome vibes from him initially, but no, he was a fine character. Like, all the kids are like fine, good characters, well developed. Like, even though most of them are like blue CGI aliens, I think this is probably the most kids that have been in like a big blockbuster movie that actually had like real deal characters and characters that developed and weren't like annoying and cloying most of the time.
They did still feel like real kids while having plots. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of times, you know, movies can have kids be like a little too smart and a little too adult or something. Like, this plot is really based around the kids being kids, like dealing with bullying, doing dumb stuff, like kind of being their own little unit away from the parents. But it also like really, really works. And I end up really liking all the kids by the end. The only one, you know, sort of throughout the movie that I was like, I got to get his name right. I think it is like Natana or something like that. What is the name of Jake Sully kids? Let me try to find out what their names are. Not Netayam. The only one that I was kind of bored with was Netayam, because I was like, oh, he's like the little too perfect Sully. How different are he and Loak? But then when Netayam is killed in the third act, first of all, like, I was shocked that they kind of went there. You know what I mean? Like, when he died, I was like, okay, I'm ready for, like, Awa to step in here, and Awa is going to, like, heal his wound. He fucking dies. And, like, that like, was kind of, like, surprising to me. And it was, like, effective, too. I was like, god damn, like, they really fucking killed Jake Sully's son in this. And, yeah, that's kind of, like, movie stuff that I feel like we... like, weirdly, this is just classic storytelling stuff, like, from blockbuster movies that we have, like, forgotten about because franchises make us not ever really want to kill anyone or have the deaths have any real meaning or anything like that. And Cameron kind of just goes back to the old classic storytelling stuff, and it really, really was effective, I thought, you know, in that third act there.
Yeah, stakes, consequences. And this is a movie that does not have a terribly high body count, at least for the most of it. People actively trying not to kill each other for most of this film, in fact.
Now, I will say, though, that especially, you know, and you got to compare everything to the popular movies of the day. So, like, compared to the Marvels and even the DCs or whatever. One thing I really do appreciate about both Avatars, this one included, is that when we get to the third act, they are unambiguously killing the bad guys. And we do get a decent number of, like, full-on deaths. Not gruesome, not bloody, but, like, spears going through chests. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like boats crashing and blowing up. The fucking guy gets Ahabbed. We see the origin of an Ahab in this one in probably the most fucked up death. The shot where they're, like, showing the chain or whatever the you know, that like the
cable from
the cable, like, digging into his arm before finally it, like, pops and we see his arm fly off. By the way, Piacon killing, you know, pulling the arm off of our Ahab guy in both times when I saw this movie got a big pop of applause and cheers.
Oh, yeah. It's a crowd pleaser of a third act. I said this about the first one. I love that the Na'vi, like, are smart and with it. And the film does waste no time on the things that most films would. Like, when the Marine Na'vi show up, like, most of the movies would spend, like, 10 minutes of, like, the Marine Na'vi showing up and not being recognized by the real Na'vi. And there being some kind of thing, like, you know, some sort of, like, plot reveal going on, like, oh my god, they're, you know, they're coming back with more avatars. Like, no, the Na'vi know immediately what's going on. They immediately, like, go on the offense. Like, I love how they're constantly shown as being incredibly effective fighters in ways that make sense and are realistic, when what you see in all the Marvel movies is just like, they're, people are getting their ass kicked until, like, they suddenly have a bigger laser to shoot out.
Or it's the kind of the same style of fighting that just now suddenly works because, like, the music has kicked in or something like that, you know? Like, this really does, that third act especially, you know, it is a full hour, but everything does make sense, and Cameron is so good at parallel action. He's so good at multiple things all happening at once.
Oh, he flexed on this one. He flexed.
Like, there's times when, like, six different things are all happening at once and we're kind of just going through all of them. You never lose the thread. It never, like, slows down the pace. Like, it is just fucking, like, that third act just fucking goes off.
Oh, man, it was so good. And, like, just so many different things going on. You had your hand-to-hand combat. You had your Far Cry, like, stealth mission going on, like some Splinter Cell shit.
Yeah.
You had, like, your all-out, you know, fucking Call of Duty combat, but with, like, on top of, like, flying creatures, like amphibious, and- like... is that
and
even
Titanic? Titanic happening
at
too.
The same time.
A gigantic boat falling, and we're seeing bodies fall off of it and shit. Now, I will speak in defense of those first 2 hours, and I think, in fact, you know, obviously, walking out after the first 2 hours, you're out of midnight. It's all okay. But you know, that's gonna not be a fair way to look at the movie. I like those first 2 hours. I think if there's anything to sort of, you know, if anything flags the most in this movie, I'd say it's right at the beginning. There's a big, long montage that basically catches us up to where we are now. And there really is that much information that it is kind of needed. We need to meet all the Sully kids. We need to meet Spider. And in that, and there is some cool stuff in there, but it's almost like a mini Avatar 1. You know what I mean? We basically get like a 40-minute long Avatar 1. It's not a last time on Avatar 1, but it's a revisiting of all that stuff.
Yeah.
We see the tree. We see the Omatakaya clan. You know, we see humans come down and do a big, massive fucking 9/11-y, you know, flames out in the, you know, in the forest and everything like that. And it's a little, while you're watching that stuff, you're like, okay, it's cool. We're seeing insane 3D. The characters are more emotive and there's some cool action in here, but it's feeling kind of like we're in just Avatar 1 again. You know what I mean? Things are a little bigger. I definitely like, what is it, like Machine Head City or something like that? I can't remember the exact name of it. And I like Edie Falco as the new general. It is cool to see
Taibo mech suit and shit. I love that.
That shit is so awesome. Her little mech suit, and when she uses, when she is using the mech suit is holding the coffee cup, and she's having the mech suit pour the coffee in her mouth using her hand as like the connect, motion sensor thing. But yeah, if anything, in that first part of the movie, you could kind of be like, okay, is this going to be more of the same? But then as soon as they go to the Metcaina clan and they, you know, are exploring the way of water and we get to the ocean, as soon as from the point when we get to the ocean forward, I'm just like, this movie, the visuals are insane. I'm on board for all of the stuff that's going on with the story. I like the Tulkun, and I like how much James Cameron likes the Tulkun. I like that James Cameron has fully figured out how whaling works on an alien planet and shows us in great detail. There's like a 25-minute long sequence where we see a full whaling expedition, including every single step of how they catch the Tulkun.
That is one scene that felt like he was on some Christopher Nolan shit, just showing off, just to show off. Like, you could, like, there at a certain point, there are two different nerds in two different places explaining how the whaling works. I think we can cut it down to just one nerd explaining. How it works. So that scene is one thing where like less would have been more, and I think that was my problem with a lot of the first half of first two parts of that movie. Just a bit less would have been more. I think this is something we've seen from James Cameron before. When you look at the director's cut of Aliens, for example, it's a worse movie than the theatrical cut, just because there's a bit too much in there. I know James Cameron likes figuring all this stuff out, how it works in detail, but sometimes trust the audience just a little bit more to like get it.
I think we're gonna get an even longer one on Blu-ray and video, and I'm ready to see that. One other thing I'd say that I love is the what the hell is it called? The like Amarita or something like that. Amarita, is that what it's called? The yellow liquid, the Amrita.
Pull
from the whale's brain. I love when the whaler. I like the explanation of it. It's so simple. They're like, this stuff stops human aging. Like, stops it. I'm like, okay, goddamn, I get it. All right, we're in. Amrita is even more than unobtainium. Fuck, holy shit.
The only thing I didn't like is I don't think the numbers crunch if it's 80 million a vial. I think you need to do fucking intergalactic space travel for in that for to quote unquote pay for all of it.
He's got quotas. They're getting a lot of them.
He was likely exaggerating, but it probably need to be a little bit more than 80 million a vial for it to really work.
Well, listen, that's probably what he's getting paid per vial. Like, we understand, that's not what his labor is actually worth here, Leslie. You know, okay. The Research Development Administration is probably giving our guy. We don't know. We don't know if he knows about that. He knows he's getting 80 mil right there. What RDA gets paid for?
He was giving his net.
What RDA is getting paid for it? We have no idea. But yeah, I think I will see it again. I think it's hard right now to get into 3D screenings of it. I understand you got to see it in Dolby. You want to see it in Dolby 3D. I did see it in that over the weekend, and it is pretty stunning and wild. And I think that there's only something like, 200 or less Dolby cinemas in the United States. So you got to find your way to one of those and see it if you want to see it the right way.
Jack, I don't want to put people off because I actually saw the latter half on just plain straight old digital 3D. And it was still mind blowing.
It was still good.
I really don't think if you're struggling out there, if you're very far away from IMAX or Dolby, don't worry. Go see it in regular 3D if you can. You'll still like get a lot out of it, I think.
Here's how unhinged I am. I want to go see it in just straight up 2D at some point. I kind of want to see how it feels in 2D without, because I actually did like the high frame rate stuff. He's gotten the closest to a high frame rate that works that I think anyone has, and some of the parts are really stunning. The switching between high frame rate and 24 frames sometimes makes the 24 frames look oddly choppy. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something I would ever notice in a normal movie, but like cutting between them so quickly, sometimes you're like, it looks a little like, yeah, I don't know, a little strange. So I thought the movie was so stunning that I kind of would like to see the whole thing in 24 frames and just see how that looks and feels. And try that out in the 2D or something, you know. But I was pretty blown away by the look of it. The story, you know, it's Avatar. These are meant to be stories that exist in myth. These are not meant to be stories that have big twists. And that was one thing. It's like, I was texting about it with friends and they were like, no spoilers. And I'm like, I don't even think there really like are spoilers for not this really, movie. No. Except that like maybe, Nayatan dies or whatever, you know, like something like that. But other than that, it's not really about spoilers. And that's, you know, a lot of the best movies, it can't really be spoiled because they're really about like the experience. You know what I mean? Like, it's only silly. And I hate to, it's so annoying that we even have to like bring up Marvel all the time, but Marvel is still like some of the biggest blockbuster movies that come out. And they really hang so much on these spoilers and these reveals for all the fans and everything like that. Like in a Marvel, it might have waited till like the end of the movie to reveal Quaritch is back. You know what I mean? Like in a post-credit sequence, we'd see Quaritch is back. This is just like right at the beginning, Quaritch is back. Here's how it happened. Like it's all about story. It's all about the basic story so that we can get into just like living in the experience.
Yeah, and what an experience it was. Like, Jack, I'm thinking, man, I need to go back and see at least the last half hour in IMAX as well. I think it's just, it moves so fast, but it makes, mm-hmm. it all made sense. And I knew what was going on and what was happening. And like, it just felt like he was, like you said, he was doing all of it. He was showing every single kind of cinematic action that you would see in films or video games or anything in the past, you know, 20, 30 years that he himself, James Cameron, has influenced. He was just like, I can do it all at the same goddamn time with a disaster movie all going on and this family story. And he pulls off the thing that some of the things that's hardest to do in these sort of action movies, make the kids interesting and relatable, yeah. and pass the torch on to those kids. Two of the most impossible things to do. But I'm excited to see, you know, these sullied children grow up into being heroes.
Come on.
I mean, yeah. I think the fourth movie is called The Toolkun Rider. And I have an idea of who that is. And I'm ready to see it.
Yes.
You know, if I'm ready to watch Lo'ok, The Toolkun Rider. I actually like Lo'ok. Really fucking got me throughout the entire movie. Pyakon, like both times I saw it, it got a laugh, but I think it was a laugh of like love. When the Toolkun talks for the first time, people like and gets subtitled, people kind of laugh. But then like we are actually completely on board. We are truly at that point completely on board with, oh yeah, the Toolkun speak. They come and they speak to the Metkayina clan and they have their own language and everything. I'm fucking about it. I really am.
So, Jack, you know, talking about these, you know, growing up, these generations growing up, it really made me think a lot about Game of Thrones. Do you think this storyline has been influenced a bit?
I wonder how much James Cameron even watches anything. You know what I mean? I don't know. It could be that there's a little, I mean, but also that would be a very smart thing to kind of base it on, because that, and it would time out kind of perfectly as far as like when Game of Thrones was at its like zenith of popularity, and when all these were being written. You know, Game of Thrones, there's worse things to model a story on if you're trying to do a generational story that actually works and feels natural, you know what I mean, versus like a lot of this stuff where it feels so forced. But yeah, I could definitely see a little bit of influence there. I mean, If only just with how big the litter is, you know what I mean? Like Game of Thrones is like, he has like five kids, and it's the same with this, you know? But really, I just feel like it kind of is, you know, I think that this is weirdly, it's kind of a personal story. It's about how James Cameron has a family now. And I think he's like kind of following the way the story wants to move naturally, while also including, you know, these themes about fatherhood and stuff like that. And you know what's kind of funny? This movie does continue with the environmentalist themes, but I was looking through, you know, the reaction to Avatar 1, and you know, I don't know if this is like widely remembered, but a lot of the initial pushback to Avatar 1 was from like horrible conservatives, you know, a lot of the same like National Review writers and just like, you know, horrible fucking take merchants on Twitter and everything like that. They were all writing about Avatar back in 2008, and they were like furious with how like colonialist it was and anti-capitalism it was. And this one does definitely keep those themes. It's an environmentalist movie, clearly, but I think Cameron has also always attuned to what is going to be the most popular thing and resonate with the widest number of people. I think that Cameron has snuck some slightly more conservative themes into this movie, so at least to like appeal to slightly more than, you know, tree hugging bleeding heart liberals. I think we see a lot more of like a father's duty is to protect his family kind of stuff in this, which I think actually is going to make this movie appeal to even more people. Which, you know, for better or worse, like, you are getting conservatives to like a movie that's really about saving the whales. but yeah, I think that the first Avatar, like, there are a lot of people probably who watched it and like walked out like kind of pissed off because it is so, you know, clearly and singularly, you know, expressing this one, this viewpoint. And I do feel like this new one, there are more people going to walk out of it being like, I'm kind of like Jake Sully with my family, you know?
Well, on this one, you got Marie Navi that you can cheer for. Like, you have
the... And by the way, Quaritch and his story with Spider, Quaritch is also has a little bit more shades of ambiguity in this movie than he did in the first. He's a dad. I like that Neytiri's racist, by the way. I like that Neytiri's racist. They show in the first act, they're like, she never fully trusted Spider, and then at the end of it, she's like, I'm gonna kill Spider. Like, and she like means that shit too. You can tell like Neytiri is like ready to cut and kill Spider. That's not a gag at all. Although it did remind me a little when Quaritch had Kiri and then Neytiri comes up with Spider and has the knife to his throat, it reminded me just a little of the gag at the end of the first Naked Gun where the bad guy is holding someone hostage and so Leslie Nielsen just grabs a random woman. He's like, two can play at that game, and holds a gun to her head. But yeah, I thought it worked, and Neytiri does have a little bit of anti-human racism, but probably well-deserved, to be honest with you.
Yes, and we are demons, as they say. She's so badass, and I love...
She's great.
She's so good, and she's like one of those badass, you know, protagonists that you will see in the movie. But Jack, you mentioned people doubting the first Avatar, and I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about box office a little bit.
Sure, okay.
And I'll start the box office discussion by reading an article from when Avatar first came out.
Sure.
By Perez Hilton, from PerezHilton.com. Mm-hmm.
The famous journalist of putting cum on faces and stuff. Go ahead.
Title: Avatar has a disappointing opening weekend. There's $500 million shot to hell. The most expensive movie ever made has failed, all caps, at the box office. To be fair, for any other flick, it would have been a rather impressive opening. But considering the dollar signs and time put into this thing, we expected a lot more. James Cameron's Avatar raked in a mere $73 million in its opening weekend here in the States. It did a little better worldwide, $232.2 million.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there are a lot of articles, people being like, ooh, it's just missing its box office expectations. Oh, it's not, it's failing to live up to the Disney box office hopes. It did better than Avatar 1 did its first weekend. And like we were saying earlier, the chosen way, the proper way to see this is in a Dolby 3D theater. And there are only like 200 of those in the country. The one thing we have seen about the new, about, you know, Avatar's box office is that 3D showings are selling out like a motherfucker. It's just these, you know, 2D showings, which everybody knows are not the ones to see, that aren't selling out. So I, you know, whether or not Avatar hits its 2 billion that it needs to hit or whatever, I think that we are going to be seeing this movie having legs. I think it's going to be number one for a number of weeks. And I think people are going to keep coming back. I mean, like, a friend of mine was like looking at showings for today at 10 a.m., a Monday 10 a.m. showing, completely sold out. I don't think that that's been the case for like any movie this year, that Monday 10 a.m. showings are selling out. So, you know, we have to keep, we're going to have to watch this over time. The first Avatar was a juggernaut for week after week. One thing that's interesting, you know, is that this released in China, and it's, I think it's maybe the only Hollywood movie that they were, that they allowed to release in China. And I think it made, something like 50 million over there. So, you know, Avatar is about worldwide. It's about the marathon, not the sprint. And so we'll have to check back in at the end of January before people, erroneously write the obituary for the Avatar series.
Even though people have been talking smack about Avatar, saying no one cares about it, the other studios took it seriously. They've basically cleared the runway for this. Jack, you want to guess when the next, you know, movie that I would call a big budget blockbuster is coming out and what it is?
Is it Ant-Man in like February or something?
Yes. Ant-Man February 17th. Yeah. That's the next like big movie coming out. I think Avatar is going to be fine.
Avatar is going to do just fine. Yeah, I think it's about the long run. I think people want to get in these 3D showings, and so, you know, just like the first one, it didn't make 1.5 billion in the first weekend, and that's not even mathematically possible. So we're going to have to see how this looks, you know, at the end of January. I mean, so this one beat the first Avatar on its opening weekend, and that was the biggest movie ever made. And we are post-COVID, and like a lot of people are still like even unsure about going back to theaters. They have streaming as another option, which didn't even exist in 2008. I think this movie is going to be doing just fine, and you know, for better or worse, Disney's going to be very happy with it until they release their next movie, because it's all just Disney versus Disney these days.
Yes. Oh, goodness. Oh, well, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the controversies that have come up about the film that I think are fairly, you know, fair points that people have made. There's a thing, Jack, called blueface, and it's about the fact that several of the actors in this film are Caucasian, but portray characters that are thinly veiled, you know, people of color. Now that color technically is blue
color.
They're technically blue, but obviously Cameron is borrowing from, you know, real cultures in the real world, and did hire a bunch of white actors to play the part. So I think that's a fairly fair controversy and fairly fair thing to call Cameron out on, but obviously something that has a long history in Hollywood. Not blue face necessarily, but, you know, characters getting away playing ethnic-y characters when they can.
You know, I think that they all did their performances about as well as anybody could. And that's about, you know, as far as I think that blueface, I think we can do away with stuff like Alec Guinness playing, you know, King Faisal or whatever. I'm okay with that. But when we get into blueface at this point, I just, you know, I don't know. It's not it wasn't a problem for me as, you know, sincere as I believe those criticisms are, and as much as I think that they are worth listening to.
And also another criticism, and this is when JC brought on himself while giving interviews. He was on a good run, Jack. Every quote that was coming from this press tour, people were like, oh, yeah, fuck those Marvel movies. Yeah, yeah, you're right about this, you're right about that. But then he got into he had kind of almost a yay moment, if I'm being honest.
I don't know about that. That's going pretty far.
It's pretty close to yay, because he did make, he was trying to talk about the themes of the film of Avatar, The Way of Water. And he mentioned the fact that, you know, he was inspired by the Lakota people. And he said something to the effect of, you know, if the Lakota had known how bad colonialism would turn out, maybe they would have fought harder. And that's kind of what he's showing in Avatar, The Way of Water. I do say that's a yay-ish moment, because now, not current yay, but yay back in the day when he said his comment, slavery was a choice, kind of the similar vibes to that. So I'm not saying James Cameron's going full hog, you know, on his yay shit. But if Avatar 3 is about how Africans were the original Na'vi, I would still be down with it. If he starts doing Hotep Na'vi, I would still support Avatar. In fact, maybe even more so.
Well, we'll see what happens. From what the actors have said, all five have been written, and they're like, number three kind of continues where number two left off. Four and five are insane, and no one is going to see what is coming in four and five.
Oh, I'm excited for it. Maybe Cameron needs to stop giving interviews, but I'm excited for it.
I'm in. I'm ready for Avatar. I think this is the decade of Avatar. I think, you know, I think it will also be another decade of Marvel, unfortunately. But at least we have these to look forward to every 2 years.
Do you really think so, Jack? Do you think Ant-Man, Quantumania?
I think that's really, so funny. Really when I saw the trailer for Ant-Man, I'm like, so the name of this movie is Ant-Man and the Wasp. Quantumania. That's like a haiku. That is such a long and bizarre sounding name. But Leslie, I am through predicting the demise of the Marvel movies, because they made it through fucking Iron Fist. I know nobody saw the Eternals, but that didn't seem to blunt the momentum in any way whatsoever. I think that, you know, the taste level of America and of Americans writ large probably is around Marvel level. So these are going to be around, you know, I'll be shaking my fist at the sky about these until I'm like mid-70s or something.
Before you're showing the Avatar, Jack, did they show the Mission Impossible making of featurette?
I don't think I saw that. I think we just got a regular trailer. Yeah,
Jack, you need to find.
I gotta watch this. Yeah, I gotta watch this.
It's insane. Tom Cruise is going to die making a movie. It's going to happen. There's no question about it.
Aren't they talking about like him going to space with SpaceX or something? Because that seems like that could be the one. That could be the one. But
yeah, that's. But he's already tempting it now.
I think Tom Cruise puts in his contract that if he dies while shooting, they have to keep in the footage of his actual death in the movie. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts putting that in.
And then they just call up Jeremy Renner, and they have a B script written for Jeremy Renner to take over for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Renner can just step in. I'm ready to see it. I'm excited. I also thought it was wild. You know, I've seen a lot of movies, you know, lately, and I was like, oh, they saved all the good new trailers for Avatar. They had like a run of like five new trailers I hadn't seen before, like right before Avatar. But you got Beast Wars, which I hadn't seen yet. Pixar about Elemental or whatever. I saw the dumbass Ant-Man one, where I guess there are people with like assault rifles living at the molecular level or some fucking thing, whatever. But they did save them all for this weekend, and I got to see them.
All right, folks, that was Struggle Session. Have a good one. Peace.
See ya.
Like what you hear? Want to hear more? Check us out at patreon.com/strugglesession or sesh.plus or strugglesession.substack.com for all our public episodes, commercial free, as well as hundreds of bonus episodes. Thank you to all our listeners for holding us down 5 years strong.